Welcome to Things I Wish I Knew, the podcast from Thinking Faith, a work of the Jesuits in Britain. I'm Julia, I'm in my early 30s and I used to live in a Jesuit young adult community. We all live hectic lives and often don't get time to reflect on what's happening both to us and around us. This podcast is meant to help you to take a moment to stop and think about where you are, where you're going, and where your relationship with God fits into it all. Every week I meet a new guest who tells me about something they experienced which changed their life forever. By talking about the things they wish they'd known, we'll explore the idea that God is in all things. And we'll talk about the part that faith plays in navigating life's challenges. Today I'm speaking to Edwin, who is a Catholic therapist and involved in Catholic music ministry. This conversation is going to stay with me because Edwin talks about the need for healing, but also about that need to thrive. And no matter where we are in our faith journey, we need that too. So Edwin, let's start from the beginning. How did you get involved in Catholic liturgical music?
So at the age of 15 or 16, I went to my first Youth 2000 event, which is this Catholic youth movement focused around the Eucharist. And I offered to help with the music there and was told, no, we've been practicing and you don't know the songs and that kind of thing. And I think that was an understandable response, but I didn't quite know what to make of it at the time. But then a few months later, the same lady that I offered my keyboard skills to reminded me that there was a smaller regional event coming up near where I lived. So she pretended, I think, not to know that I could play the piano and said, oh, well, do you want to come and help with music at this event? So I did that. And that was really my entry point into music ministry. Up until then, I'd just been playing around on the piano at home in my family and not really, offering music in a way that was publicly on display.
So how did you go from like leading music into therapy?
Also kind of along the same track in a way, because with the youth work I was doing, which included the confirmation program, social events, I was running like a youth choir as a voluntary project for the teenagers to get involved in. And then they would, let's say, go off for an apprenticeship or to uni or they'd sort of disappear for a while and then come back and have questions and want to talk. So I found myself in the position more and more of people just wanting to sort through stuff. And at a certain point realized it would be good if I'm in this position to know what I'm doing a bit better, to get skilled up. And at that point, I'd probably, yes, I had been in my own personal therapy, which was really the result of having an experience of burnout after working hard. And so there were three strands, really. My involvement in youth ministry, where young people were coming back and wanting to talk about stuff, then my own personal therapy, and then I think just a general interest in the idea of like human growth and what it takes for a person to grow. And that might include healing from wounds that they've sustained along the way and understanding themselves better and who they're called to be.
And how do you think therapy and faith fit together?
I suppose from my perspective, I think that they fit really well, but I don't know if that's something that a lot of people give consideration to. And I probably wouldn't have done either if I hadn't necessarily, like if I hadn't got into being in therapy myself. I guess what I see when I look out at the scene in the church is that there's just different experiences for people. Some people, they like to come to church on a Sunday and it's part of their routine and maybe they get something just from knowing that they're connecting with God in that way. Other people do see it as a place where they can learn, I guess. Other people see it as a thing of, I want to become a better person, or let's focus on service, which is, all of these things are so important as different aspects. And I suppose maybe I would understand that underpinning a lot of that would be this idea of growth, that if, when we look at even the natural world, there's a process of things growing. And there's that saying, isn't there, if it's not changing, then it's dead. So things that just evolve and move and shift and shape. And so I think faith, in a sense, could be a help to that process that's occurring anyway. And it could also course correct when the process of growth on its own, given that we live in a fallen world, can kind of go astray sometimes, especially if we don't understand things well, or if we're hurt by things or make our own mistakes. So I think therapy and a deep life of faith actually really are working towards the same end.
I was reflecting on how I think quite often people see churches as a place for like the perfect people to go. Like when you're getting everything right, then you'll be the person that goes to church. But actually, and Pope Francis said it, he called us like a field hospital. And he talks about how church should be about people who's like for people who need their hearts healing. And so actually churches are full of people who have gone through all kinds of different experiences. But that kind of conflicts with that traditional viewpoint. And actually quite often I think traditionally people, maybe, or the way I've seen people, if you're at church, you've got to show that everything's going well and everything's going good, and you can't show that side of being broken. And so therefore quite often people might think, oh, therapy is not for me, even if it is meant to be for them. And actually maybe they think it conflicts with their faith. Is there anything you want to say about how we should be challenging that viewpoint?
Well, actually, something you've just said does speak to some of my experience in client work, where, because I mostly work with Catholic clients who've sought me out as a Catholic therapist. But for some people, I have encountered a kind of point where they stop and say, I think I'll take this to prayer now. And even for some of those clients, there's this kind of separation almost of like what I can deal with God and through my prayer and the sacraments, perhaps. And then stuff that I might deal with more professionally. I think some of it has to do maybe with a view of therapy as well as being quite medicalized or being quite clinical. It's just hard actually to understand the field. So even when inquiries come in, sometimes people address me as doctor. and maybe people don't really know the difference between a psychotherapist and a psychiatrist and a psychologist and
Do you want to give us a brief difference?
Well, so a psychiatrist is a doctor who's gone through their full medical training, and they specialise in psychiatry. And only a psychiatrist in the UK can prescribe meds or make a clinical diagnosis of like a mental health condition that would be a cluster of symptoms that kind of have a label attached. A psychotherapist, I think the word psyche in Greek is the word soul, isn't it? And then therapy is the Greek word for healing. So I'm a soul healer, apparently. But it really, like another word would be counsellor. So it's a person who might be able to hopefully help skillfully encourage someone to discover their own answers and sift through things with them to provide an empathic, supportive framework in which to do that. There's so many different approaches to therapy. Psychologists, I think there's a difference between apparently if you study a psychology degree, you can call yourself a psychologist in the UK without sort of breaking any guidelines or going to jail. If you're a clinical psychologist, that does come with a specific training that you need. And then I think in that case, you're then qualified to undertake certain tests. You can do certain types of research, that kind of thing.
That's really helpful to know, because I've heard those terms quite often and not knowing what the difference is. I want to go back to what you were just saying about you have a lot of Catholic clients who come to you because you're Catholic. Because I was again thinking about that must be really important for people to have a therapist who understands your faith beliefs. Even like, obviously you're saying Catholic for Catholic, but even someone might be another Christian denomination, to have somebody who has a similar view of what God means to them must be really important.
Yeah, that's it. And I think there's research that kind of looks at the benefits and the disadvantages of similarity or difference between the client and the therapist. So for example, a female client, a female therapist, does that help, or could that at certain points be disadvantageous? So I think there is a risk maybe for Catholic clients with a Catholic therapist that assumptions are unexamined, because it's kind of like, oh, well, we both obviously see everything the same because we're both Catholic, and that isn't necessarily true. There's a lot of people who see things very differently within the Catholic Church. But I will ask clients when they inquire, like, what does it mean to you that you're seeking therapy with a Catholic therapist? And for some of them, it might be just to start the session with a short prayer. Most of them, I find it's a combination of when I use certain like jargon that the therapist will understand, you know. So if I'm mentioning the rosary or confession or something, that I'm not going to be the therapist who says, could you explain what that means to me, and using up session time. And then a combination of that, and then also this idea of a common worldview or a common understanding of the human person, particularly when it comes to issues that might like border on the moral or go into the moral realm, like addictions and that kind of thing, that they'd want to know their therapist isn't saying, well, maybe your religion is your problem. you know, which sadly some people have encountered in working with non-Christian therapists.
I wonder if there's kind of a suspicion between the faith world and the like therapy world, like if there's a if they're kind of seen as they should be two separate sections. You should either be in the faith world or you should be in the faith world. Mm. No, therapy world. You should either be in the faith world or you should be in the therapy world.
Yeah, yeah. I have encountered a bit of that suspicion, not usually from people who are seeking my services because they've crossed that threshold. Okay, so I've met a lot of priests who are so glad to know there are therapists they can refer people to. I have met a few priests who I think don't really understand what the boundaries would be, and they may feel a little bit threatened by the idea that people would be coming for pastoral support and possibly including confessing their sins, like, you know, not in a sacramental sense, but if someone's saying, if they're dealing with an addiction to pornography, for example, which is quite a common one I work with, then that's going to involve like talking about what they've done that in their framework is a, like a bad choice. So I think some priests, yeah, there might be a sense of feeling like it's a bit beyond the boundaries of what they're used to and their own understanding of their role. And I think I've also encountered amongst non-clergy, let's say, a suspicion of therapy that could be a little bit like, well, surely your faith should provide everything you need, like just the bread and butter of the sacraments and regular church attendance and maybe daily prayer. And so therefore that kind of like underscores that sense of therapy being a much more clinical, medicalized thing, that only if like you're really seriously struggling with something and you probably would get referred through your GP and stuff, rather than actually if I have a bit of money that I want to invest in this as a way to grow, then I can do that.
And how, when you say way to grow, how do people grow in therapy?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I think a word that I like to use a lot is integration. And so I have this kind of image, which of course, like every analogy fails at a certain point, but of a jigsaw or like a Lego model. And the idea that for that thing to be whole, every part needs to be present and correctly aligned. Like if you just scatter jigsaw pieces on the floor, then every part is present, but they're not put together. Or you could put them all together, but if there's one piece missing, then it's not complete. And so the idea of integration being that we have these different parts of ourselves. And that's, I think, you know, an element of like Catholic anthropology, particularly from St. Thomas Aquinas, who studied really or like used his intuition to say we've got a mind and a will and these passions or emotions and a memory and different faculties. And of course, our body, not separating out that as a part of our person. And the idea that in the fall, lots of things came out of alignment with each other. So our relationship with others and with God and with the whole universe and within ourselves is kind of disrupted. And integration being that thing of bringing things back into harmony and into realignment. So an example of that, because that all sounds quite theoretical perhaps, would be, let's say I have like an unacknowledged anger towards someone or a situation that's beyond my awareness, but I just find myself experiencing, let's say, somatic symptoms of, I don't know, stomach ulcers or something really serious like that. Then it would be bringing that anger into my awareness so that I can look at it and accept it and understand how best to channel it. And so therefore the integration and that growth towards wholeness, like, excuse the analogy, you know, the full jigsaw puzzle being put together. Mm. Yeah.
With your music background, I've just had a song come to my brain, which is Casting Crowns. And they have a song about, I think it's called Thrive, but it's about the idea that we're all meant to be, God is calling us to thrive rather than just survive. Mm. And that, as you were talking, I was just thinking, yeah, that is what we're, that's mm-hmm. what we're meant to be doing, right? And we're not meant to be numbing it down. We're not meant to just be going from one thing to the next. Mm-hmm. We're meant to be living our best life for that mm-hmm. awful mm-hmm. saying that people say quite a lot. But yeah. That is what it is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, there's lots of data that might show that people who've experienced a certain kind of trauma, let's say, are unlikely to ever be completely free of like the, you know, the PTSD symptoms. But it's not necessarily for us to set the limits on that for an individual person. Mm. So it's something I think about holding hope, honestly, in a world in which we maybe feel like too much rests on our shoulders that we've got to be in control of. That's quite a responsibility.
So in your own experience, as you were going through personal therapy, how did you integrate your faith into that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I feel blessed that I didn't have to search too hard to find a Catholic therapist. Towards the end of my time working with her, she was retiring from that work early, otherwise I might still be with her now. but that was helpful because of the things I mentioned, like about the Catholic jargon. She wasn't kind of wondering what I was going on about. And I was still working very much in ministry. And so she kind of understood some of that church context as well. But I think in terms of the work I was doing, there were big parts of myself that I'd kind of shut off from awareness or kept hidden because it didn't really fit within the image I had of myself and I wanted others to have of me being, you know, in full-time ministry within the church and, the kind of person that should look like in terms of how they've got their life together, always like running on full energy, not dealing with any brokenness behind the scenes. And that just wasn't true. And so I think it was helpful then to be working with a Catholic therapist who understood some of that contextual stuff, to be able to go through the process that had I not been Catholic, she probably would very skillfully have still been able to assist me with. But for me, because of that being what I was bringing, my own faith as well, it just got folded in really neatly, I'd say. Mm. Thank God, yeah.
I was just thinking, it's not to do with therapy, but I find it really helpful that my personal trainer is also Catholic because I can say to him like, oh, I had to go to Mass and that's done this. And so I can kind of understand from that how helpful it is for that, particularly that Catholic jargon, to have somebody who understands it as well. Mm-hmm. So where did you feel God's presence in your journey?
If I look back, probably in different ways along the way, I think something I commonly hear people talk about is how present they feel God to be when they're either doing really well or when they're struggling. And it seems that for some people, it's like they feel him closer or they call upon him more when things aren't going well and then they sort of forget about him when things are going well. And I say that because I think for me, it may have been some of that. But one of the things I learned from Youth 2000, or one of the things they recommended at least, was really developing like a personal prayer life that would mean just taking time every day to pray. And I think often in the mix of other things they'd recommend, it might have kind of got a little bit left by the wayside. But I'd say by God's grace, I have been someone that's taken time to pray like virtually every day for a very long time. And so I think because of that, it might have tempered a little bit that possibility of feeling God present only at certain times, let's say when I'm struggling or whatever, because there was that discipline that his grace was helping me to follow of acknowledging him more regularly. But yeah, around the time of my burnout and going into therapy, there was a new like depth of prayer for me that really just involved having to really receive his unconditional love in these places that felt so shockingly suddenly exposed of like, I am anxious and not sleeping and I've had to cancel loads of work and what might people think about that? And just my whole self-image really was like shattering in a way that ultimately I think was probably helpful and needed, quite painful at the time. So very much feeling like, in relationships, even with family and friends and people that I didn't know so well through the church, that maybe how I was in relation to them was changing. And so there was definitely like a deeper connection I had to form that God was offering to me to kind of reach out and take hold of just knowing it was enough to be in connection with him, which helps really alleviate, I think, a lot of the terror, or that might be too strong, but definitely the anxiety around what was happening because it was so unexpected that I would just crash like that.
It's so good that you had that connection in that time, because I was just thinking about when you're in ministry, it's so easy to just be like, well, I'm doing this for God. and to not have that connection, because you're like, oh, I'm doing this and this is for God, and I'm doing this and that's for God. And actually you're not building that personal connection. And it's good that you still had that even in that time of like where you got to your burnout as well. So what have you learned from your own experience of therapy?
I don't know how I could sum it up, but one of the sort of unpleasant things I learned in a way is that it's got to be an ongoing journey. I think when I started therapy, because of how unexpected it was to be in this position of just not being able to carry on with work, I probably saw it as a task, and that once I was through it, then I'd be kind of back to where I was and I'd be good to go. And I think maybe one of the things that I learned in therapy was that growth is an ongoing process. And there were definitely these kind of moments where it felt discouraging to recognize, oh, I thought I was past that way of feeling about myself or thinking about this or that or dealing with others. And I'm kind of back here again. But like realizing it, that with each, in a sense, like iteration or like going round the merry-go-round of growth, that things would gradually change. So rather than seeing it in too much of a linear way, which I was very used to, and I think that was part of the drive and just the way I would focus on ministry, like everything was a task to be accomplished, and it was more of a kind of sense of being and like a gradual unfolding. And so I think I was glad in the end to recognize that, if it's the truth, because then it's more comfortable to just operate within it rather than still trying to be this driven, linear person. And I find that with clients who come, they often want to know, how long is this going to take and what are the things I can do? What are the tasks that I can do or the homework I can take away? And an element of that can be helpful in therapy, but I think there's also room, particularly in our culture, which is so driven and so utilitarian, for kind of slowing things down and also looking at the therapeutic relationship as kind of a bit of an avenue for testing what connections and relationships are like.
You've just reminded me that when, and I know they're very different things, but when I started having spiritual direction, I used to like see prayer the same, like it's, I'm here to there. But actually, first I would have conversations about, this is what's tripping me up or this is what's challenging me. And then however many months later, I'd be like, it's the same thing. And my spiritual director would be like, it's not that you're going back, it's that you're going in a spiral, and it's maybe that you're coming back to where but you're deeper down, and your growth is different because you're in a different place. And I guess is the easy thing of, you could say in therapy, is you're thinking, as you said, I'm starting it today and in 6 weeks' time I'll be perfect, I'll be better. But actually you don't know what's going to happen in 6 weeks' time or 6 months' time or six years' time that's going to come back, and you're going to have to dig deeper into whatever you've been discussing in therapy or in spiritual direction. I feel like I should ask though, what is the difference between therapy and spiritual direction?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that it maybe depends on the way that a person would see therapy. Some people see it as a set of communication skills, like a container into which you can put various different things. And certainly I know of people who've trained in spiritual direction who learn some of the kind of basic counselling skills. I've worked with different spiritual directors personally myself as well, and some of them have taken an approach of like, you can bring anything here. It doesn't have to be only be about your prayer life or like how you feel in your relationship with God. So if you're, yeah, just like not getting on well at work, or there's a particular person in your life you want to improve the relationship, you can bring that here as well. But it might be that something around the approach that's taken in that. I'm not sure I honestly would know. And I think spiritual direction probably as a field, although it is much like more longstanding through history, it may be less focused and has been less kind of studied in that analytical sense that therapy now has been. It's developed just over, you know, the last 150 years or whatever, into all these different modes of therapy and lots of research studies and stuff, where I feel like spiritual direction has maybe remained more in the realm of the mysterious and a bit of like, well, we've just done this for centuries. And they're both forms of accompaniment. I suppose for me as a Catholic therapist, maybe the sense in which I'm just holding whatever the client wants to bring about their relationship with their faith and with God, that would be included. But I guess I do feel like in my practice, I have an internal sense of when we're kind of going right up to the border of therapy and then moving into spiritual direction. That's where I would acknowledge that with a client and kind of pause or inquire then if they haven't already said about where they're getting that spiritual accompaniment from. So I don't know. That sounds as clear as mud.
Maybe I need to ask the spiritual director what they think the difference between spiritual direction and therapy is as well.
It could, because you could ask a different therapist and they'd say something different from me, but also you could find spiritual directors, I think, who for whom it's very much, well, we're talking about how your prayer life is going and like where you are on the journey of, you know, the dark night of the soul or whatever, those different, or even some of the St. Ignatius's rules for discernment and that kind of thing.
So therapy is about looking inwards, and you've just mentioned St. Ignatius. And in Jesuit spirituality, one of the exercises we have is the examen, which is very much looking inwards. It's looking at how your day's gone. So what does looking inwards actually look like in daily life?
Yeah, so I think making that practice of a daily examen prayer, that could be one way. For some people, it's as simple as starting with something like keeping a mood diary, which could be, I don't know, three times a day, writing down what their mood is. And that can be therapeutically useful for people who very much like occupy the mood they're currently in. So if they're not feeling great, their impression is it's always like this. Or if they're feeling great, they might feel like that's just going to be the case forever and ever. And by jotting one or two words down a couple of times a day, or some people, they might like do it close to a mealtime to help them remember three times a day. Then it actually just gives them a more accurate view of what's going on. So I think it's something about finding little ways of identifying the movements of our psyche, our soul, our emotions, and maybe our thought patterns as well. Firstly, to get a bit more of an objective view of them. And I think that some of that objectivity also comes from other people who earn our trust enough over time. It could be support people or good friends or maybe some close family members or partner, to be able to say, here's what I'm seeing in you, and for us to be open to hearing that. I do think that whilst looking inwards is so important, and that our culture very much encourages us to look out at like what we want to achieve and what we want to go for. And then sometimes the idea of looking inward can seem a bit self-indulgent, like just endless introspection. And of course, we don't want that. But I'm a big believer in communion with other people, essentially, because I think, you know, God has designed us in his image and likeness, and he himself as a communion of persons. So that idea of actually, I learn the truth about myself partly because it's given to me by other people. And they may be inaccurate in what they're reflecting back, but then over time, I'm also going to realize that this person doesn't see me accurately. So in the end, I feel like it all kind of shakes down to a good way of like fleshing out our identity. So it's perhaps one of the ways that in therapy and spiritual direction, having that person accompanying us is useful, because actually we're getting another human being's perspective. And then we've got that to weigh up as well, not only our own kind of looking inward. So looking inward by ourselves and then allowing others to kind of help us look inwards as well by hearing them convey to us what they see.
So what do you wish Catholics understood better about therapy?
I think I wish that Catholics understood that therapy, in the context of where we're at today culturally, can just be beneficial. Where maybe for the remnants of our thinking, you know, within the church, that therapy remains this thing that's kind of reserved for people who are really struggling, and some of the taboo or the stigma around that of, you know, like it must mean that someone's character isn't really strong enough to cope or whatever. But actually just in view, I would say, of where the world is at and how things are quite polarized, and in spite of all the really great like technological advancements and including in science and culture and that kind of thing, that there's a lot of issues, there's a lot of problems, and that I think also perhaps partly because of the world of technology in which we live, some of those problems can feel very close by. Even if they're hundreds of miles away, we're looking at them a few inches from our face on a screen. And just thinking about what that's doing to our kind of consciousness and our awareness of what's important in life. And I guess I'm thinking that I wish Catholics would see it as something that could be helpful at this point, where maybe in other times in history it wouldn't have been so necessary for so many people.
And do you think that the viewpoint of Catholics as a again, a generalization, is changing on that? Do you think people are now starting to see it as more helpful?
I think I've seen that, yeah. So I'm 42 this week, and most of my clients are younger than me. I have a few that are older than me. And so given that most of them are young, I also feel like the generational difference plays a part, that Catholic or not, younger people are just more aware of mental health issues and like more comfortable to talk about all of that stuff. So it would make sense that Catholic young adults are in that boat as well. And since I've started in practice as well, the number of inquiries has just been going up and up. So whether that's something to do with the idea of Catholic therapy crossing people's mind a bit more, or even, you know, the websites that Catholic therapists list on becoming more visible through the search engines, I'm not sure. But I do feel like it's opening up a bit more. And certainly, obviously, clients come individually. They don't know who my other clients are. But you find a mixture of people who are quite tentative of like, is this really sort of like therapy worthy, in inverted commas? And people who might much more see it as like a service that they're accessing, a bit like a personal trainer or, I don't know, a life coach or something like that. So there are people who want to come and just kind of explore where they're at in life, their identity or transitions. And other people who come more with a kind of presenting issue that they really feel is an obstacle in their life of faith or just in their life generally.
I was going to ask you, but you've answered it already. Is there a difference between the different generations, between like older generations having more of an issue with therapy, or and the generations younger, like Gen Z, being more aware of their mental health and therefore accessing therapy more? Mm-hmm. So what do you wish you'd known earlier about becoming a whole person?
I wish I'd known earlier that every part of a person is welcome, even if it needs some working through or some kind of honing and refining and maybe like the rough edges rounding off. And I think a lot of that has to do with my own family culture, you know, like my personal story, issues that were there, and perhaps culturally growing up in mid Wales, going to primary school in the little village. I'd say also the context of like modern Western culture, and then maybe also the British thing of like having a brave face or keeping things hidden, stiff upper lip and all that. So I think I wish I'd known earlier that, yeah, everything can find a voice, even if once you've done that and you've kind of said, okay, I'm actually feeling this about that or whatever, that you can put that to one side and move through it. But like, it can be acknowledged, it can be seen, it can be brought into the light.
Mm. And what are you grateful for?
I'm really grateful to live in Devon. I've just moved there a year and a half ago. I live on the coast, and I am so privileged and blessed to be able to get to silent prayer in Eucharistic adoration every day if I am able to wake up on time. I'm very grateful, yeah, for the journey that I've been on. And I think what it's meant over time is that I am living more fully in reality on its own terms. So there's less of a sense of I've got to kind of exert effort here and there to like find out what my groove is that I can move through. So yeah, I think on a deep level, I just feel more settled and more at home, not only in Devon and in the lovely house that I rent, but also at home in myself and at home in the universe. And I'm really grateful for that. Of course, life is never perfect, but what I'm experiencing as time goes on is that the trials and the sometimes, you know, real extreme trials that come along can kind of be borne with in a different way. And I'm grateful for that. And I hope that what it means is that I'm able to kind of offer something then to people who are going through things as well, which I'm also grateful for. It's a privilege to be in that role.
Thanks for listening to Things I Wish I Knew. I know this conversation is going to stay with me because of Edwin talking about their relationship between therapy and spiritual direction. How about you? We'd love to hear how Edwin's story resonated with you. And why not also tell us if you're facing an experience you wish you knew how to look at differently? It might just be something we can help with. You can find out more about this and other themes at thinkingfaith.org. Thank you again for listening. I hope you'll join me again next time on Things I Wish I Knew.